Let me see it.
Is it cute?
Yeah, it's so cute.
Send it to me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Okay. Look what I just posted. Brunch with these two dum-dums.
Oh my gosh, so good. Is this good? I said Sunday Funday with these idiots.
Yeah, that's good. That's great.
so cute. Okay, so cute. Look what I just posted. Eating crap with these sacks of if they died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. So cute.
Wait, what the hell?
You called me a dum-dum and she called me an idiot. So.
Yeah, when you post a pic of yourself where you look really cute, then you have to say something a little self-deprecating so it doesn't look like you're just bragging.
Oh, all right, this is good. Okay. Slapping down some pig with these fat and I'm the fattest of them all. If I died tomorrow, no one would shed a tear. Load my freaking lard carcass into the mud. No coffin, please, just wet, wet mud. Bay.
Jesus, Brenda.
All right, I got ya. Gulping down some pig with these bags of meat. Sunday fun day with these pig hope nobody gulps us.
So are we the pig or the bags of meat?
Okay, let me try another one. Sitting here with two bona fide pieces of hog. They're mad because I won best hog at the hog snarfing contest. But I'm not mad because we're all loads of beef sitting on the side of a highway getting our butts sucked by flies. I tagged you both in that.
Why?
Why are you guys bullying me?
TBTL.
Maybe he saw his reflection and thought, I'm flying in hot for that hottie.
It's like your own mini garden. And, well, now that you think about it, it's kind of fun seeing how good it grows. It's kind of like, you know, kids. Like, it's kind of like kids growing up.
My podcast is on life support. Hey, I need new listeners.
I want to be the bad boy of public radio, like Elvis Mitchell.
All right, here we go, everybody. Hello, good morning, and welcome to a Thursday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
There's no whining in football, but every August, football comes to wine country.
Just wanted to kind of clear that up right here at the top of the program so you guys know that there's no whining in football. There's some whining in podcasting, and if you listen to this show, you know that to be the case. Hi, by the way, my name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Mimi!
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. It is a cloudy, relatively cool day today. And I got to say, I know that I've been mostly enjoying the sunshine, other than when it's streaming into the Broadcast Center. But in the daytime, I've been really enjoying some summer sun. But I'm actually okay with it being a little more on the overcast side today. It's a welcome little relief from the heat. It was cooking last night here at Burbank Springs. I had to go out at 10 o'clock at night and jump in the swimming pool to cool off, which I know is, you know, that's a first world way of dealing with being too warm at 10 o'clock at night, admittedly. It's quite a traumatic experience for the pod dog, though, I'll mention.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
As Carrie was at work late, so I was making a little video for her, and then afterwards I actually put the video on Twitter to try to demonstrate how just terrified the pod dog is. She spent more than half of her life, I think, here at this house now, where there is, in fact, a swimming pool. Anytime anybody enters the water, she is convinced that that person has been pulled into some sort of Sarlacc-type situation and will die if she does not run around the perimeter of the swimming pool freaking out. She's like three or four years into this, and that is still her move. So anyway, nice to have a nice cool morning and bring everything back to normal here on episode 2962 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
This is a story that has been sent to us by many of the tens of listeners because it brings together things that we talk about on this show a lot. Animals and stupid people. A lady here in Washington State decided to pose for a real fire picture.
She put an octopus on her face, and she says that turned out to be a big mistake.
It really did. I will tell you what happened to this woman when she put an octopus on her face for a photo op. Also, speaking of animals, scientists say they have discovered the remains of something they're calling Squawkzilla.
There's something about the soul of a bird.
I don't know if it's technically prehistoric, but a now deceased and now extinct mega parrot that was too large to fly. It was the size they think of a kindergartner. And it would eat other birds because it couldn't fly. So it just walked around. And they thought it was an eagle. They had these. They didn't just discover the bones. They've had the bones for a long time, but they thought that it was an eagle. And no, it was a Squawkzilla.
There's something about the soul of a bird.
So we'll talk about that. We'll squawk about that. We'll give them something to squawk about. Oh, God, I apologize.
I
this is a terrible way to start
told
the show.
Joke.
We'll talk about that coming up, too. Also, it's a Thursday, a.k.a. Blursday, so we got some Blursday messages as well. And we have this guy, longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's coming in hot for this hottie because he is known in some quarters as the Miami Meat Tent. He is Andrew
Cobrowns
Walsh. He's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. That's right. You said go Browns. I think the Browns are having their first preseason game today. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think I'm interested, honestly. I don't have any plans to watch.
Now, that's not interesting. I don't mean it's not interesting that you said that. I actually mean it's interesting. I guess I was just trying to be funny, and it didn't work, but you are extremely, as would I be, were I from the Cuyahoga Valley. You're extremely excited about your Cleveland Browns football team, and usually the first pregame season, even though it's a bunch of people who are just trying to make the team, it's still just the first time you get to see your team running around playing tackle football. I always get very excited for that with the Seahawks, but you are not excited about that as it relates to the Browns. Why?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I usually am. Let's see. Well, first of all, I see that the game is on at 4:30. I think I have a haircut at exactly that time, so that's, you know,
move it.
I don't know. Or go to Sport Cuts, right?
Do you have a don't go to Sport Clips? I swear to God. I got my hair cut at Sport Clips a couple times ago because of scheduling issues, and it was the only place I could do it. And the guy who cut my hair, it was like someone had quantum leapt into a person who was about to do a haircut. Like, he's like,
did he say, oh boy, right before he started cutting your hair?
He literally came to in the standing position, holding scissors and a comb. And then was just like, Ziggy, how am I going to get out of this? Like, it was wild. It was like, I don't know if you've ever gotten a haircut that you start regretting the second you sit in the chair. Because if you get the kind of haircuts I get, it is just the absolute roll of the dice. I don't call ahead and ask for Janine or whatever. I just go in and Murphy's Law seems to dictate that I always get the person who looks the least competent. And you ever do that move where you're watching and you're like, oh, God, please let this permanent wrap up fast because that person looks like they're better at cutting hair than that other person who's doing the neckline. Oh, no, they're getting out the hot towel. Shit. It's like watching the Hydros at the Mariners game, but the stakes are much higher. You're just hoping that the person you want finishes up before the other person. Anyway, do you actually call ahead? Do you have a person that you go to?
You know, I used to. I had a couple of people that I would, like, go to a couple of times in a row at various Rudy's barber shops. But now I just – I schedule my appointments online, and I haven't really latched on to anybody lately. And I've been making appointments usually kind of last minute, so I just click the anybody button. I'm a little less – I mean, listen, I've gotten some bad haircuts in my life, but I am a little less I'm trying to think of a word. I was going to say persnickety, but that makes it sound like that's got a negative connotation. I'm not saying that you're persnickety about your haircut.
You've given up.
You care about how you look. I don't want a bad haircut, but I also have a very simple thing. Like, I'm going bald, cut my hair, make it seem like – I always tell them a couple of things. You know, cut it, clean it up, but I don't want to look like I just got a haircut today. And, you know, make sure that you don't cut it so short that it sticks up. And – you know I'm losing my hair. Let's not do anything to make it seem like I'm trying to hide the fact that I'm losing my hair. I'd rather have it just be a plain, fine cut, but don't do anything that makes it look like I'm grasping at straws up there.
So you're saying that me taking finasteride, wearing a laser balding helmet, and putting powder over my bald spot, you feel like that's me grasping at trying to keep my hair?
I am not. I swear, even as I was saying that, I wasn't even thinking about how that. I honestly, there are so many things I say on the show where I'm so careful. Like, I wasn't even saying that to compare myself to you. I promise. Listen, dude, you're on TV. Like, you're on TV. You have something that you're going for and doing. You're a successful man. I'm just a middle-aged sidekick. Like, it just, the stakes aren't as high for me.
No. I promise you, I took zero offense. It is funny, though, the difference in, like, you, like, you couldn't have two people who are taking more opposite approaches to the thing known as male pattern baldness. I am just like hanging to the cliffside, like hanging to the four strands of hair I have left on the cliffside. Like, and you're just like, yeah, you know what? I had a good run. Just, you know, shave it down and send me home.
Well,
by the way, all the more reason for you to not miss your beloved Cleveland Browns for a haircut. You could just you go in there anytime. Go in there at 3:30 today.
I actually kind of have a busy day. I got things going on. Let me actually let me, you know, I wasn't sure if we were coming back to this after I made my comment about not watching the Browns game, and I'm trying to sort out my feelings about this. I do feel I have a bunch of things I just have on my agenda today, and I got a presentation thing at the University of Washington tomorrow about podcasting. It's just like I'm doing as a favor to some friends who work there.
Is this
there.
The presentation where you're going to tell them don't podcast?
Yeah. Did I bring that? No, I'm not going to this time, but I have done that in the past. Hey, come on in.
Have you literally given
a
podcasting presentation where you told the people don't podcast?
It wasn't a presentation. whatever. About 2 years ago, my partner's boss, Genevieve's boss, Genevieve was actually on a work trip, so she wasn't even around for this. He said, you know, we have somebody who is interested in maybe giving us a grant for a podcast. Now we're trying to figure out, should we do a podcast and what should it be about? And so I went in there, just had a meeting with like him and I think two other people. So it wasn't a presentation. And I didn't, you know, I was just like, okay, let's talk about this. And, you know, I just said, well, what are you trying to accomplish? Don't just start a podcast because you have money to start a podcast. Like, what are you trying to accomplish? And then ask yourself, is a podcast the best way to accomplish that? And right now, I'm not hearing anything that says you have some mission that you're trying to achieve that you need a podcast for. So, yeah, they were joking around. They asked me to come back a couple of years later, and that's what I'm doing tomorrow, talk to a different team of people. This will be a little bit bigger. And they said, yeah, could you come in and do your don't do a podcast presentation, only this time don't say don't start a podcast. Like, we actually have some ideas this time. We just want to bounce some things off you. But anyway, I actually think that I'm not really well equipped for that kind of thing. I have some friends who work in this same podcasting space who really pay attention to what's going on out there in the podcasting landscape. Like, I'm not actually that great at those things. So I let them know that. I said, I'm going to be coming in. If you just want to do a Q&A, keep it real casual, we can do that. But if you're looking for somebody to really kind of have more of a consultant perspective on this, I can hook you up with some other people. I am way into managing expectations. But can I put that on the table for a second? So I'm a little bit busy today, but back to the Browns question. You know what I think it is? Every year, I'm very excited for football season. I always put together my Browns schedule and my Seahawks schedule side by side. Yes. I see where the conflicts are. I started that last week, and usually I just sit down and I knock it out in like an hour. It's very designy.
Yes, it is. And I still have last year's up. Beautiful.
And,
I printed it out.
But you have to go to the, you have to whatever. You have to do some time math on local time, make sure you're not making any mistakes. Anyway, I got about halfway through it last week and I started to feel claustrophobic. I started to realize, like, my parents are in town this weekend. Where can we go to watch the Monday night Browns game when my parents are in town? Oh, God. Okay, well, we can maybe do that. And then all these other life factors came in, and now I'm trying to squish things around for football. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not starting to fade on my enthusiasm for the Browns. If anything, I am more excited about this year than any previous year. This could be a huge year for the Browns. Could also be not a great year for the Browns. Let's not count any chickens before they're hatched. But I'm very excited. But for the first time, putting these schedules together just made me feel, like I say, almost claustrophobic and like, oh, God, I'm watching the next 6 months of my life of weekends get dictated by football that I'm both excited about but also trepidatious about. And I think maybe part of that is I'm not going to start that with preseason football today, but, you know, a game that's not going to be all that exciting to watch. And, you know, I got a lot on my plate today. I'm not going to be moving around appointments so I can watch a preseason football game and, you know, week one of the preseason.
You're trying to establish boundaries with football and you're trying to establish them early.
I'm not even trying. It's just, it just, it's not appealing to me to do that today. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just, it's not a, it, there's not a part of me that's kind of like, oh, I want to watch that game. It's more like if I happen to be in a place where, oh, I got done with work, look at the time, that game's on, okay, I can go switch it on, I would maybe do that. Today it's not going to work out because I have an appointment. But, like, there's not a part of me that's kind of like, oh, I'm tempted to move that appointment. It just, that sounds just sort of exhausting to me for this game. Because I know, number one, I can go back and watch it later. It's not live. It's not like I'm worried about it being spoiled like a real game where you go into a media blackout, right? I'm sure the best clips will be on YouTube. There'll be plenty of ways for me to experience and enjoy the best parts of what happens without me blocking out 3 hours to watch a lot of stuff that isn't that great.
That's an extremely healthy way to look at it. The different that's and it also really illustrates the difference between you and me, because and this does not come as any kind of news to the listeners because of my kind of like constant upgrade mentality, and everything is malleable if I need it to be moved so that I can then have maximum enjoyment. But ooh, we should start a podcast network called Maximum Enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
thought about that. Really take this. Mm-hmm. By the way, I wish you would have told me that you're only so-so on podcasts before we announced 7 live events in the next 2 months.
No, I mean my podcasts, not into other
including,
people's
by the way, Minnesota State Fair.
Right.
Wednesday, the 28th of August, we'll be at the Minnesota State Fair at the MPR stage. If you get to the hog birthing booth, you've gone too far. So stop at the blueberry pies. Look to your right, and there we will be. Also, we have the TBTL Summer Picnic, September 7th, Lower Woodland Park, and then our TBTL 3000 Tour, Monday, September 30th in Orlando, Wednesday, October 2nd in New York City, and Friday, the 4th of October in Seattle. That's all stuff we have coming up. I was going to say, though, just quickly before we go to the break, that's the difference between you and me, and I say this in a way that I'm envious of you in a certain way, which is, like, when you make an appointment, whether it's a haircut or something even more important, then that just becomes the plan. And then you just abide by the plan. And there's something about that I respect, because the challenge for me is that I am of the personality type where I'll make a plan and then something better or more fun will come along. And then I'll start thinking, well, is there a way for me to get out of this plan, or a way for me to change this or cancel this? And then I become a kind of more slippery person than I want to be. But it's like if I had made – because the Seahawks are also playing tonight. And honestly, I'm actually not that jazzed about this game. But the difference is the Seahawks don't have like 3 of the overall number one picks from the last like 5 seasons playing. And you know the excitement around the Seahawks is less than the excitement around the Cleveland Browns this year. And even so, I'll definitely watch at least the first quarter of the game, even though Russell Wilson's not playing, which is literally one of the only reasons to watch a Seahawks preseason game. I guess I'll see what Geno Smith has to offer. But, like, I am very quick to just change things up if I want to do something different. And you are very not quick to do that. And I actually think your way of doing things is better, I think, for everybody involved.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, there's definitely, you can make the argument that I could be more flexible with some things, especially when it comes to work, because I don't like moving things around. I mean, I'm sure maybe between the two of us, we might actually be on opposite ends of the spectrum. When
I think
it comes
we
to
really,
that.
I think we actually are.
Yeah.
Which is why this is such a troubled friendship. I mean, that's why this is such a great working relationship.
Right, exactly.
All right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about octopodes in the news. Of course, the TV announcer got it wrong, which we did too for a long time. I kept saying octopi. I think he's octopuses or something.
I forgot about that. We learned that
octopodes.
Lesson.
Octopodes, everyone. Local TV newscasters. Anyway, we'll talk about octopodes in the news and then Squawkzilla. Plus Blur's Days. Oh, and also we'll talk a little bit about David Berman from Silver Jews, RIP. If you feel okay with talking about that, Andrew, I know that hit you pretty hard yesterday.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that. That hit me really hard yesterday. We'll talk about it in a second.
Okay. We'll take a break, and then we'll come. How about we come back with some Silver Jews?
Oh, yeah. I got it. I got it all queued up. I have a plan.
Okay, you got a plan. All right, here we go. Quick break, and then more TBTL. Stay with us.
If you got a message, leave your name. We'll get back to you. Sleep on your back and ash in your shoes, and always use the old sense of the word.
Advice to the Graduate. That's off of Starlight Walker, the very, very first record by the Silver Jews. My favorite record.
That's David Berman, and also sounds like Steve Malcolmus in there.
Yeah.
David Berman passed away. It was announced yesterday. I'm not sure exactly when he died, but it became public yesterday, and it was a very sad day for fans of Silver Jews and fans of a certain kind of indie rock. That David Berman really seemed to kind of exemplify. Now, here's the thing, Andrew. I've known about Silver Jews for a long time. I've heard their songs occasionally, but it wasn't until you and I were in Australia that I realized you're like a pretty big fan. You played a whole Silver Jews album one time for as we were driving through God knows where in the Outback. So I guess I kind of want to, if you feel comfortable, hand it over to you a little bit. What did you like so much about this guy David Berman's work?
Yeah, and I want to say, too, that like I can't, you know, I was watching when the news broke yesterday. We'll talk more. Boy, did it. More than any, it's funny how this stuff hits you, man. I would have never guessed. Like, this hit me harder than literally, I think, any celebrity death, if you call him a celebrity, or artist death ever. Like, Genevieve came home, I was sitting in my window, like we have a window where you can sit and look out on the roof. I was sitting on the roof, basically, not the roof where we had the party, but a higher roof. Yeah. And just like listening to this, and she came home. I didn't realize how upset I was until I tried to start talking about it, and just started openly weeping. Like, I've never never done that. It may have to do with, honestly, like, you know, I might just be, you know, God knows what's going on with my hormones right now too, but it was special. And maybe because it wasn't hugely well known, maybe that's part of it, right? Maybe it feels more personal when, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not the only person who likes the Silver Jews, obviously, but, and I was finding solace in reading tweets about other people who just really loved them. I started to say, I'm not like the end all be all. There are full Silver Jews records I haven't even heard all the way through before, but I have my records, right? I remember how I heard him. It was from my friend Sarah Chaluta. By the way, nicknamed Fleece. I think we named her that because she had this really long, luscious hair in college. So I think that's how she got her nickname.
Oh.
I hadn't talked to her in probably 15 years. And I pulled out my phone when I got the news. I just texted her. I'm like, hey, is this still your number? She's like, sure is. I don't think that it was really hitting her that hard. I don't know where she lives right now. I think somewhere in California. And she's, I was just like, hey, haven't talked in a really long time. Just want to say, you introduced me to the Silver Jews. Sad news. David Berman's gone. She's like, oh, that is sad. Here's a picture of my daughter. We're biking around the neighborhood right now. And it's a beautiful sunny day. And I was kind of like, maybe I shouldn't have swooped in and been like, hey,
you're weeping with
dead.
A bottle of Jim Beam yeah, on the highest roof
exactly
on your house.
Right.
Like, we need to call somebody.
It really seemed like it would be probably. But anyway, that was, you know, I'm glad to know that Fleece is still out there and that we still have some sort of contact. So that's good. But and I'm sorry, I'm all over the place. But yeah, I remember she gave me a cassette tape. I think she wanted me to know about Pavement. It might have even been one of those situations where I didn't really know Pavement that well, but they were coming to town and she wanted me to go. I know that's how I got into The Bends by Radiohead, but it was around that time. It would have been, you know, the mid-90s, and she gave me a Pavement tape. What's our favorite Pavement record?
Crooked Rain.
And that took up, like, I think one full side of the tape and then maybe half of the second side. And then it was like the second half of side B. She just filled it up with, I think, this album, Starlight Walker. And I remember really liking the Pavement, but loving the Silver Jews and just being like, what is this? Like you mentioned, Stephen Malcolmus's voice you heard on that last track. He was part of the Silver Jews on this first record. So there was a lot of overlap in sound there. And I'm all over the place, but I was looking for, if there had been some sort of a vigil in Seattle, I was Googling David Berman vigil in Seattle. He's not even from Seattle. There's no reason why there would be a vigil. I just wanted to be around other people playing Silver Jews music, and I couldn't find that yesterday. So I just did it myself and apparently brought myself to tears.
I totally get feeling emotional about that. I mean, I cried on this show when Prince died, and Lord knows Prince was – I understand that the personal connection to somebody like David Berman, because he isn't widely known, and he – I mean, honestly, this is a weird – this is a weird way to describe it, but like probably I'm Steve Malcolmus and probably you're David Berman, because Malcolmus is a little bit slicker, a little more – I mean, no one would –
he's got more
Steve
hair.
Malcolmus.
I get it.
Well, most of that's topic. And if you've ever seen Steve Malcolmus without his wig on, it's really a sight. But like, I could see you, if I might just psychoanalyze for a moment, I could see why you would identify with David Berman, because he was a guy who didn't, for somebody who was making art and music and stuff, he did not seem to revel. And this is a lot of stuff I've just found out in reading about him a bunch in the last 24 hours. But he was pretty reclusive. He didn't seem to be in his element when he was in front of a bunch of people or having a lot of direct attention paid to him. At least that's what I've read. And I wonder if his whole sort of vibe was one of kind of reluctant, but still obviously very talented artist, I guess. And I could see 20-something-year-old Andrew kind of just identifying strongly with this character of David Berman. Is that in any way describe what actually happened or why you were so drawn to him?
I think so. I mean, the lyrics are really good. They're rooted in sadness, but also cleverness. I mean, he was just a hell. He was a poet. When you look him up, like on Wikipedia, he's first and foremost listed as a poet.
Right.
And let me I don't know if I can answer your question directly, but let me tell you about what my night was like last night, because I found this sort of interesting, and I think it ends with an explanation of why I was so upset when by the time Veeves got home, where she was, by the way, in Green Lake Park with her brand new hammock, living what she is now calling the hammock life, and saying that I need to get on the hammock train and that I don't understand the hammock life. Anyway, based on our behavior individually,
David Berman was not about the hammock life.
He was not.
For the record.
My beautiful girlfriend is in the park, like, showing me, sending me pictures of the hammock, saying there's room for two, and I'm like up on my roof crying, listening to indie rock from the 90s. Boy, she's lucky. What a lucky woman. But I wasn't just listening to indie rock from the 90s. So here's the deal. So I was actually at the Westie, which is like a little restaurant bar near here. It's where the Browns games are played, and so I've talked about it on the show before.
If
and I was having
heard
a
heard about the Browns,
my former loves, and I was just having. It was one of those days where I got done with work around 4 o'clock, and I hadn't eaten lunch yet. We had a weird, like, kind of top-loaded day yesterday, and so we wrapped up work around 4 o'clock. And I'm like, I haven't eaten lunch. It seems too early for dinner, but I'm starving. So, all right, I'll go to the Westie. And then I saw, the Mariners game is just starting. Okay, I'll sit there and I'll eat a chicken wrap. And maybe I'll rap with the bartender a little bit and watch the Mariners. So I'm sitting there eating, then I'm
done. Pass the mic, bro.
So then I'm done eating, and then I get I see the first text. Oddly enough, the first text I saw was from Taffy Brodesser Eckner. I never thought for some reason, it just seemed like a weird place for me to get the news. And then I'll.
And when you say text, you mean tweet, right?
Because I say text?
Are you texting?
Oh,
are you texting with Taffy?
No.
Because if you are, will you get her on the show, please?
Sorry, that was a misspeak. That was me trying to inflate my image. No,
that was me apparently trying to deflate you.
No. I'm glad you corrected
it. You got Taffy on speed dial, dude. Hook it up. Let's get her on TBTL.
I'm going to read her book as soon as I wrap up this other bullshit book I'm reading. Anyway, I saw her tweet. Then I started to see other tweets coming in, and our friend the Stewbot was tweeting about it. And I sat there, and I was kind of like, it was one of those things, kind of like when sometimes you get sick or you get a stomach ache, and at first you're just kind of like, I feel kind of funny, but you don't really pay attention to it until like an hour later you realize it's kind of snowballing and getting worse. So like I'm kind of sitting there getting more and more sad about it. And then I'm like, you know what? I know that I've heard the Silver Jews on the sound system at Teddy's before. I really had no intention of going to Teddy's yesterday, but I'm like, you know, those, depending on who's working, I can bro down with somebody there about how sad this is. And so I go over there, and the bartenders who were working, neither one of them really are familiar with the Silver Jews. One doesn't know about them at all, and one of them is like, eh, I know a song. So I was kind of like, oh. So I had like one beer there, and I was kind of like, I just... It was weird. Again, I'm not usually like this. I wasn't like this when Tom Petty died, and I love Tom Petty, but something about this, and also we should just say, like, he's a man who lived with a lot of sadness, a lot of depression. His end, we don't know the details, but you can assume that it was as tragic as you can imagine. And so I think that's part of it, too. And so so I go home, and I'm like, oh, I'll sit up on my roof where I often sit and listen to music, and I'm listening to these albums. And then he has a brand new album out, like brand new, came out last month. He did not make a record in 10 years. He disbanded the Silver Jews and then was quiet on the musical space for 10 years. Recently, his marriage or relationship kind of dissolved in some way. And this album, apparently, this new album under the name Purple Mountains is... deals with a lot of that stuff. And I rarely listen. I hadn't listened to his latest Silver Jews record. And then I guess have a lot of interest in this, or I hadn't really thought much about this record. And then yesterday I was like, well, I guess I'll give it a listen. I've listened to Starlight Walker all the way through twice. But I didn't expect it to really move me, because this was a moment for me to go back and listen to the old stuff that I loved, that I'd already connected to as a youth. Right. This new album is so good. It is so good. And that's what kills you. Like, not only is it so good, but it's good. And it's also rooted in just the deepest sadness. And there's something about art that you love the art because it's so sad. And then you know that the person on the other side is suffering so bad. And that's why it's good. It's like ironic. It's torturing. Can I play one song as I get choked up here? This is track two. All My Happiness Is Gone.
Friends are warmer than gold when you're old. Keeping them is harder than you might suppose. Lately I tend to make strangers wherever I go. Some of them were once people I was happy to know. Mounting mileage on the dash, double darkness falling fast. I keep stressing, pressing on. Weighted down some substratum, feels like something really wrong has happened. I confess I'm barely hanging on. All my happiness is gone. All my happiness is gone. It's all gone somewhere beyond. All my happiness is gone.
Pretty heartbreaking.
Wow, that's amazing. And the juxtaposition, obviously, of this kind of upbeat, much more. I've been reading about this album, and everybody's been saying it's really good, and it's also like his most accessible album he ever made.
Oh, really?
And yet. Well, just the sound of it. I mean, you know, that's pretty polished compared to a lot of the earlier stuff. And yet the lyrics just being so heartbreaking and so kind of just like honest and transparent. I think you and I are also probably sort of at an age. I mean, everything he's saying in that song really resonates. Like while you're playing it, like I start to get emotional. And I had a fairly limited knowledge of David Berman and of Silver Jews. But just that message of kind of like friendship and how it's hard to keep friends, you know, as you get older and maintain friendships and also just the ways that we try our best and it's not enough or not good enough in relationships. It's like that's a very intense thing to think about. I think when you're young, when you're 22 and things aren't great. You just figure, yeah, but I got my whole life to figure this out. And then you're 43 and things aren't great. You're like, shit,
yeah.
This is my real life. And I'm like, this might just be who I am. It's a much more intense thing to deal with that stuff, I think, when you're in middle age and maybe older age than it is when you're younger. So that's a really beautiful, really heartbreaking song. And
yeah.
If I mean, again, you're also talking to one of the world's leading inappropriate criers. I'll put my penchant for crying out of the blue up against anyone's. But I would absolutely have been a mess if I were you yesterday at my house listening to that. And I was gonna say, I'm bummed you couldn't find a Burman community, because honestly, like, if there's a place where you might find it, Seattle would be one of maybe three cities in America where I would expect it. One would be Austin, probably.
Mm-hmm.
One would be Seattle, and one might be like some enclave in Brooklyn where, like, I mean, I bet you those would be the Silver Jew hot zips.
Yeah, so. you would think. Yeah, I don't know. But also, like, and it's just weird. I don't think I've ever, like, I loved, again, just to make the comparison again, I love Tom Petty so much. But, like, when that happened, maybe that's part of it, too, because it was such a public thing and it was so communal, whereas obviously there were a lot of people kind of weeping openly about this on Twitter, but it just felt, you know, it's small. It feels more smaller and private than just a huge star who, you know, played the Super Bowl halftime show like Tom Petty.
Right.
I was texting my friend Paulie some of the lyrics in this record, too. I think that's what really threw me over the edge, too, is listening to this record and thinking, I'll listen to this, but I didn't think it was going to connect with me right away, only because I'm a fan of his stuff from 94 and 98, right? And I'm somebody who, you know, like a lot of us, especially at our age, hearing the new music of people we really loved in the past, sometimes it just doesn't pay off. And this sounds like maybe it is more accessible, but it's a bit of a return to form as well. Like, some of his later stuff that lost me a tiny bit was way more countrified when he was when he brought his new wife into the band. I believe her name was Cassie. I think I saw them on tour for that record, and it was way more countrified, and I thought that was more polished. And it was still good. It just wasn't for me as much. You know, musically, it didn't speak to whatever speaks to me. And so listening to this, I think I listened to this album like three times in a row last night. I was like, I'm bonding with this record now, and it's so new. And also, once you know the background, that it's so sad that this, I mean, the lyrics are so right there. They're so right there. Like, every single song is that sad, yet that awesome. And he's supposed to go on tour this weekend to, you know, support this thing. One of the lyrics, though, this is funny. You know me, I'm a sucker for any kind of clever lyric about drinking getting on top of you. I sent this one to my friend. I think in this song, before that one, called That's Just the Way I Feel. I think this is from that. Well, there's some of these I can't read, but when I try to drown my thoughts in gin, I find my worst ideas know how to swim. I was like, oh, God, that's
oh, my
good.
God.
That's so clever.
That is really insightful. Wow. When I try to drown my thoughts in gin, I find, what is it? What's the line?
I find my worst ideas know how to swim.
Oh, my God. Fucking A, man. I know that from personal experience. That's intense.
Yeah.
There's also, I mean, the idea that he was making really good music right up into the end.
Mm-hmm.
Not that if he was making shitty music, it'd be like fine that he had passed away, but it's like he was, I think that must add some sadness to it, is the idea that, like, he wasn't done.
Yeah.
He wasn't out of ideas. And I was just, for those who are possibly interested, and I don't know if that's any of you out there, I never knew where the name Silver Jews came from. I guess it was, he saw a sign in a jewelry shop, Silver Jewelry, but from certain angles you couldn't see the end of it.
Oh, really?
Like,
I didn't know
Silver
that.
Jews.
Yeah.
That's where he got the name from. Also, he had a really weird relationship with his dad. His dad was a lobbyist for, like, the tobacco company and oil. His dad was a lawyer, but he was a lobbyist for a lot of these really, you know, pretty bad companies. And he was really, he said his dad was a despicable person. Like, my father is a despicable man, he said. This is what he announced when he was disbanding Silver Jews. He had a really strained relationship with his dad. Like, he just, I mean, and as you mentioned, I mean, he struggled with drugs and alcohol, and he'd really been through a sort of a lot in his life, which of course makes it even more identifiable, because we're all fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you find somebody out there who's been open about how they've struggled, you really sort of bond with them. as an idea. And so also to hear those lyrics, even of just that one song you played, and then to know that his life ended, I'm going to say it's safe to say it probably ended in something involving drugs, alcohol, and who knows if it was, you know, who knows exactly what happened at the end. But like you said, I it was an untimely end. And to hear him singing about his sadness is it's intense based on the fact that he's now passed away.
Yeah, I know that he was supposed to. I'm on the Neptune website now looking, because he was supposed to come, you know, at, for that album, Purple Mountains, which is like the the band name. He was supposed to be there on the 13th of September. I wonder, I don't know what the usual protocol is. You don't think that they would possibly like keep the date there and have it be some sort of celebration? Inspiration, do you? By the way, I'm also seeing you on this website. I'm scrolling down looking for his ugly mug, and then I see your ugly mug right there too.
Fat
full,
mug.
Full head of hair, ugly. Though. Full head of hair. Beautiful.
Yes. I'm more powder than man.
Oh, is that movie Powder about you? I never realized.
That's me without my without my prosthetics.
I should watch that.
That's an interesting question. You know what? I happen to know the person that runs that joint. Maybe I should email him and ask him.
And you should volunteer to coordinate it.
No, maybe you should volunteer to host it.
Yeah.
Would that be?
No, I don't think.
Will you? Let me ask you this: Can you see a day where you'll be able to listen to this Purple Mountains record, and have it be not just emotionally wrenching? It's hard for you to know right now. This is very fresh. But do you think you'll get to a point where you can enjoy the record,
mm-hmm.
or is it always going to be very connected to his passing?
I think both. I mean, I'm really enjoying it now. Like, I listened to it the first time out of curiosity. I listened to it the second time out of, holy shit, this is good. And the third time, because now it's just a record I'm listening to. And
you just also described the TBTL listener. Minus step two.
Minus
holy
step
shit,
two,
this is good.
Right? No, holy shit. That's where that thought process ends. But no, it's really good, and I'm sure it will always be connected to this moment. Like, you know, like I'm sure I will. I mean, this is a great record, and I'm glad that I thought I would listen to it once and be like, okay, that's what he did. That was his last record, and maybe it'll pop up. And like I when stumbling for words the other day, I mentioned an album grafting onto me, which is not the best way to put it.
Yeah.
But you know how it is that certain albums, you can have them for a year, and then after a year, suddenly you get obsessed with it. Like, certain albums just connect with you and others don't. Some connect right away, some connect later, and some never do. And I was really surprised that this one connected right away for me. And it's not just because of the context. I mean, that was part of it, and that's part of my relationship with this record now. But, yeah, no, I'm sure I will continue to listen to this through the summer. I'm not done with my first pass at this record. And then I'm sure, you know, like so many records, it'll fall, you know, a little bit to the back burner as I move on to other things. And then probably a couple of years later, I'll come back to it and be like, wow, the summer of 19. I remember it well. It was all Jenny Lewis and Purple Mountains or whatever.
You know, the last time I had a really, really strong experience, reaction to somebody passing was actually Mac Miller.
Yeah, I was thinking about you.
Which was very weird because, like, I'm too old to be a person who's getting upset by the passing of, you know, like a, I don't know, late 20s hip hop guy. But it just so happened that I had become obsessed with that album Swimming. And there were so many lines in there that kind of felt like they were speaking to my world a little bit. Like, and like just about how you kind of get to some place that you think you wanted to get to, and then it doesn't really feel the way you thought it was going to feel and stuff like that. And I was just, I mean, I was listening to that record at least once a day, and then he died. And I remember being like in the car with Carrie and being really emotional,
mm-hmm.
and also really embarrassed that like I'm that emotional.
Yeah.
Because he's more like he's more in the direction of Tom Petty than David Berman, in that, you know, when he died, lots and lots and lots of people were publicly sad about it. It was a more or less a pop star dying. And I felt kind of embarrassed that it was hitting me so hard. But it did, and I think it has to do with, in that case anyway, I had just been connecting so strongly with his music in the months and weeks right before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I felt really devastated by it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of regretting, because you said that you were embarrassed about it because he was more of a pop star. And I was talking about the Tom Petty example. Like, you know, people know and love David Berman. There was tons of people who were showing an outpouring of grief and appreciation for him, too. It's not like this is like some little band that is, and or that you get extra points if the person is somewhat more obscure. You know what I mean? Like
I would say I think the connection feels stronger. I think that's okay. Let me continue to spiral this into weirder and weirder territory. I think people feel really strongly connected to our show because not that many people know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think if we were Joe Rogan, certainly people love the Joe Rogan show and they're big fans of his. But I think the connection, I think the more that you feel like you're in a relatively small group of people that know about a thing, I think the stronger the connection can feel because of the fact that it feels, I don't want to say exclusive, but just it's not everybody mourning for like the most famous person. It's something that was special and unique, and you were part of a short list of people that knew about it. By the way, I can't find the quote right now, but I was reading this article in the New York Times, this, I guess, a memorial for David Berman, and he said something. Did you happen to read that about his kind of reluctant his reluctant relationship with being kind of a star? This is actually the New York Times quoting this interview from The Ringer. Did you happen to read that?
No, I didn't do a lot of reading on it. I was reading people's kind of thoughts on Twitter, and every now and then I'd bounce around into something. But no, I didn't like kind of sit down and do a lot of background.
Well, here, so Berman's talking to The Ringer. This is for this new album. And he says, "I'm not convinced I have fans," he said. "In my whole life, I've had maybe 10 people who have told me how much my music means to them." He basically had tens of fans.
right.
It is kind of funny. I don't think you're trying to rank who's supposed to feel sad about what. But I do think there's a natural tendency towards, if something is kind of on the more obscure side and you connect with it in a intense way, I think that connection is really strong.
Speaking of music I love and music that I loved in the 90s, I'm still on the
Hadaway, What Is Love?
Yes, I'm on the Neptune Theater page. Diggable Planets are reuniting and playing this Friday, August 9th. Did you know that?
I did. I saw that because I was trying to figure out if the Neptune was available for us to do our October show. So I have been carefully cruising their website. Turns out it's not. So we will not be at the Neptune. But yeah, Diggable Planets, that'd be pretty cool.
I'm strongly considering this if there are still tickets available.
Hey, could we do this? Yeah. We need to thank some donors of the day. Yeah. And while it would be probably relevant to play a Silver Juice song, maybe that would be a little bit – that might be extra intense.
Might be a little intense. Yeah, exactly.
So maybe could we get some Diggable Planet donors of the day? I know that's a lot of D's, dude.
Did you say Nickel Bag of Funk? Is that what you said?
I did, actually. I was thinking it.
Let me see if I can find that song. Uh-oh. Did I pick one that has a long intro on it?
That's good. They all have a long intro. I'm into it.
But no samples.
Let's thank Ivan Vukovic. Hey, we know Ivan of Seattle, Washington for donating to the show. Thanks, Ivan. Also, Eliza Halder of Iowa City, Iowa. Chad Bates of Bothell, Washington. David Brumley of Bellevue, Washington. Mark Dimsky of Midwest City, Oklahoma. That's a great name.
We're leaning into it. Yes.
We are leaning into it.
That's awesome.
You know where I'm from? Midwest City, Oklahoma. Where are you from? Northwest City, Washington.
Yeah, I'm from Pacific Northwest City, Washington.
And then Glenn Ferguson of Bellevue, Washington, also known as East Side City, Washington. Glenn, Mark, David, Chad, Eliza, and Ivan, thank you for donating a nickel bag of money to us.
Nice.
Making the show. I don't know how that would work. You open it, it just has more money in it. We really appreciate it, honestly. I was thinking about this last night. I don't know why. I've been in kind of a, in a good way. I've just been in a very contemplative mood of late.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just hanging out on the front porch with Rudy. I was watching the sunset. And I was just thinking about how lucky I am to get to have this job, that this is a thing that I do for a living. And it's only because of people donating to the show. So thank you for donating, tens of listeners. Thanks, Ivan. Thanks, Eliza. Thanks, Chad. Thanks, David. Thanks, Mark. And thanks, Glenn. We wouldn't be here without you.
And if I can spoil something here a little bit, keep an eye on that name, Ivan. He may be returning later in the show.
Oh, okay.
The stuff that gets you high, the action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot. The vapors get got. The streets get the buzz. The funk up your...
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Our top story comes to us from Northwest City, Washington, where a woman decided, who was helping run a fishing derby, she decided to that somebody accidentally caught an octopus, and apparently there was, along with this fishing derby, there was also a photo contest. I guess it would be like who took the best, wackiest photo from the fishing derby. Now, I have to say, Andrew, going into this, it's going to be challenging for me to put my little, like, I'm just going to call them my PETA sympathies to the side, because I think we've had quite enough of that for 1 week and whole conversation about my shoes yesterday and everything like that. So I don't want to just be a complete, I don't know, crank or annoying nag about these things. That being said, this fishing derby is going on. This woman who helps run the fishing derby, somebody accidentally catches an octopus, and this woman gets an idea about what to do with the octopus, and that is to put it on her face for the photo. Things did not go great. I actually have some of the news tape here. I've actually edited out the part where the guy misidentifies what the plural of octopus is, but just know that he did it wrong. Oh, can I also say, Andrew, you may remember this from your days of news producing. Is there a greater... I mean, is there a worse place on the internet now that 8chan is closed down? Is there a worse place on the internet than a local television station website?
As far as just like finding stuff and...
As far as you name it, when it comes to bad things on a website, they got it. Pop-ups? Boom. Kludgy? Yes. Poorly written code where things are constantly accidentally covering other things? Boom. Like... They are the local television news websites are the shittiest websites ever. And I actively avoid them. I couldn't actively avoid this one because the local TV station, Cairo 7, they had the story. And actually what happened was I saw it on a different – part of it is here's what I think. I think that – and this is, per usual, the least interesting part of this story. But you'll like it.
What happens is – what does that say about me?
You like stories about kludgy websites.
I do.
So here's what I think is going on. I think that these giant media behemoths, I think what they do is they build one sort of shitty website and then they try to get all their TV stations to adopt that website.
I believe that is true.
Because the same thing happens with newspapers. I subscribe to the Bellingham Herald here in Bellingham. And I don't get paper delivery of the thing, but I go to their website a lot. And they must be part – I think they're independently owned, but they must also have something going where it's like they do some kind of – they trade stories with other kind of similar-sized newspapers because there's this weird like similarity between the websites of every local TV station. And so for instance, this octopus story, I found it on a different – like a TV station in Virginia or something. And they had linked to the Cairo story, and it was all effed up. The file wouldn't play, and it was cut off at the beginning and cut off at the end. And I think it was because they didn't want people to realize it was a story from Cairo. They wanted people to think that the local station in Virginia had reported a story out of Northwest City, Washington. Like, you're not fooling anyone. But they didn't have the time to go reshoot anything. They literally just chopped the beginning and the end off.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some, like, you know, Suzuki of Ruston, Virginia ad plays before. It's just like, you know. just actually, you know what? I think it would be Reston, Virginia, and I think it's Ruston is a town in Washington south of Tacoma. Point being, I hate these websites, but I plugged my nose and I waded into one to get you this audio, Andrew, so I hope you're friggin' happy.
When Jamie Buscaglia met up with some fishermen who'd hooked an octopus during a fishing derby August 2nd, she saw an opportunity for an unusual picture.
It was a photo contest in the derby. And so, crazy me, hindsight now, and looking back, I probably made a big mistake.
Can I just say, I want to try to cut this woman a break. She's on camera. She's probably nervous. That's fair. But I literally hate people who talk this way. I hate this actual syntax of talking, of just, I can't explain it. Let's just say this. There have been people in my immediate life who have had this manner of speaking, and it is part of why they are not in my immediate life.
What am I listening I find for? It to be, what is the...
I can't put my finger on it. It's a style of speaking that just gets under my skin for some reason. And I can't, I've never been able to describe it to anyone. It's just a, I don't know how, it's like, if it bothers you, it bothers you. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It bothers me for some reason. The way that this person is speaking just kind of bothers me.
In the derby. And so, crazy me, hindsight now, and looking back, I probably made a big mistake.
Buscaglia put the small octopus on her face and posed. It grabbed her face with its suckers, then did something she didn't expect.
So she expected it to grab the face with the suckers.
Oh, yeah, that's classic. That's classic, yeah. Octopus on your face right there.
Yeah, she was like, I've seen the Robin Williams film Popeye. I know how this goes. Yeah, okay.
I've done my
step
research.
One. Step one, suction to face. Okay, this is all going according to plan.
Face with its suckers, then did something she didn't expect. It bit her on the face.
It had barreled its beak into my chin and then let...
Okay, right there. I know that... Listen, we have absolutely no room to talk on this show about using the wrong word. We do it on a constant basis. But, like, I don't like that she said barreled. I think she means burrowed, but she said barreled. There's this kind of just like when someone will say, but on the other side of the coin, this sort of subtle malapropism that just, like... is a style of speaking where you pay very little attention to the specifics of language that just – it really grinds my gears. Oh, it really barrels my bores. Wait, what? I don't know. Anyway, it barreled into her cheek. Now things are going off the rails.
And then let go a little bit and did it again. It was a really intense pain when it went inside. And it just bled. Dripping blood for a long time. I had
Buscaglia says the octopus was a smaller version of this giant Pacific octopus that lives in the Point Defiance Aquarium. An aquarium spokeswoman says it could also be a Pacific red octopus. Both have a powerful beak used to break and eat crabs, clams, and mussels, and their bite contains a poisonous venom to immobilize their prey. Buscaglia says that venom left her in incredible pain, but as owner of South Sound Salmon Sisters, she kept fishing for two more days before she finally went to the emergency room.
And I'm still in pain. I'm on three different antibiotics. This can come and go, the swelling, for months, they say.
And Buscaglia says the whole painful experience taught her a valuable lesson about handling a live octopus.
This was not a good idea. Hindsight, looking back, I will never do it again.
I guess why I'm annoyed is because I don't know if I want her to apologize to the octopus. I want her to be – I don't feel like she sounds, to me, apologetic enough. I think I want – I mean, she's going hindsight being – looking back on hindsight, like, it's like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Like, that was a bad idea. But I guess what I wish – the way I wish the interview would have gone would be she would have been like, that was the dumbest thing you could have ever done. Of course I got bit on my face because – I was messing with Sasquatch. I was messing with an octopus, and it is so – I cannot even tell you how painful it is, but it's 100% my fault. Like, I feel like I want her to be more clear about where the fault in this whole interaction lies.
Well, a bunch of people sent this to us over the past couple of days. It's just one of those stories where people saw it. It was kind of a wacky local news story, so when people – heard it or read it, they thought of us, which I always kind of like that. It means that, you know, I have shows where when I read a story, I think of a podcast or a show that I feel like would share the desire to talk about it. But I watched half of this and then I turned it off. I didn't know that we'd ever be talking about it on the show. And I don't think the same things bothered me about it that bothered you. At the very beginning, and I don't think you had this in your tape, and I'm glad that you didn't, but the version that I saw started with – I had no idea where the story was going to go. And it started with, like, the name of her company, like the newscaster saying, like, the name of her company and, like, talking about her mission statement about, like, supporting women fishermen or fisherwomen or whatever. And, like, I thought it was going to be, like, more of a – I thought it was going to be more of a softer piece, like that woman who was making household items out of cow turds. And she got, like, a promotional
– clocks.
Yeah, clocks, 1:30, 2:30, 3:30. And, you know, like, every now and then, local news will just, like, focus on a colorful character like that. And, yeah, it's blatant –
1:30, 2:30, 3:30.
And, like, it's blatant promotion, right? And it's like, well, we're just going to do the soft feature and, yeah, we promote this person's small, weird, turdy business. In this case, it started off with that tone, and then I'm like, oh, wait, you're just an idiot who did something really stupid to both yourself and an animal, and then you got stung, and then you got stung and your face swelled up. Why are we doing a news story about this, and why are we promoting your business so much? Because I just noticed at the end of the tape, which I didn't even make it to that point the first time I watched this. Yeah. I dismissed it quickly. I was like, why are we giving her any kind of promotion? She shouldn't have done this. She did something stupid. Yeah. Like, any more than if I had, like, you know, fallen off. Well, I guess if I had fallen off my roof crying last night, maybe that would have made the local news, too. Fat man falls off roof crying. I don't know. It just seemed like it was some sort of a promotional video, like almost like look at this local hero who went too far. Like, she's not a local hero in any way. Like, why are we giving her any time?
Yeah. And also, I feel like, well, whatever. Now this is just going to add more, give more attention to this whole thing. But that whole thing of, like, Salmon Sisters, I think that might be some kind of a brand that's maybe being franchised. I know there's a Microsoft Surface ad which featured some people called Salmon Sisters, and I think they're based in Alaska, but these –
I remember that ad.
Some other Salmon Sisters of Tacoma or something.
That's interesting. I wonder if –
are you trying to bite their rhyme? Are you trying to – did you license their name? And how does putting an octopus on your face play into all of this? Now, listen, I have to totally basically cop to why I was mostly annoyed by this, which, again, I said I was going to try to low-key all my animal welfare BS, but it's because of the end of the piece. Take a listen to this.
Jamie Bishelia says she got revenge of sorts on the octopus. She took it home, cooked it, and ate it, and she said it was delicious.
Revenge?
Like, okay. Yeah. Like, this octopus was just minding its own business. I understand. This is how fishing works. Something's in the water minding its own business, and then it's on a plate somewhere. Like, I get that that's fishing. But, like, this octopus was minding its own business, got bycaught by someone in a friggin' salmon tournament or whatever. Woman puts it on its face, on her face for a photo. It bites her. Go octopus, by the way. And then she punishes the octopus by taking it home, killing it, and cooking it and eating it, and it's delicious. Like, I don't know. That just seemed a little gruesome to me.
Yeah, I don't even mind knowing that she did end up eating it, but, like, that I'm more just mad at the copy on that. She got her revenge. Local news, man. But yeah, she got her revenge. That doesn't even make sense. No, the octopus tried to get revenge. Look, tried to protect itself from her taking a living creature and messing around with it so that she could take a dumb photo.
Yes. Just because she wasn't holding the reins, she still had the octopus in her mouth.
That's right.
I think that's exactly.
Just because he surrendered the reins doesn't mean Jonathan Abram doesn't still have the bit between his teeth.
Oh man,
I know. I don't know. It's probably not very useful for us to do stories where we're just going to be, like, totally just shit talking the person in the story. But I have limited sympathy for this woman, and I have to tell you, I was very much rooting for the octopus in this story. And, you know, I'll tell you this: I love octopus. The eating of octopus. Mm-hmm. They have one at Tasty and Alder in Portland, and it is so good. I ordered it every time I would go to Tasty and Alder because it was delicious. And then I was reading about octopodes and how freaking smart they are, and I was just like, God, that was kind of one of the early things that was sort of in my brain of like, well, I should probably not do that. But I mean, I'm if I'm thinking about the top three things I probably wish I could eat, I would eat that octopus from Tasty and Alder. Except for the fact that I don't want to be this lady in this scenario. So.
Yeah, and again, I like to eat meat, but like I never think, like, oh, I got revenge by eating this hamburger.
Right, that's a weird relationship with the thing that was not harming you in any way.
Couple of things. So I went pretty hard too against the homeowners in that neighborhood in Southern California yesterday about how I thought they were being a bunch of busybodies. So that's kind of two negative hot takes in a row. Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. All smiles and sunshine. Tomorrow we're going to just joyful stories that spark joy. I do have a quick question for you, just out of curiosity. Yes. What is your deal with fish? Do you ever order a fish sandwich early in the morning? Are you eating fish?
No, I don't eat fish either now because I heard about salmon can remember things. Fish are pretty – here's what I will eat. I will eat oysters. My thing is – and again, I say this – the admitting that I have recently purchased a pair of leather shoes that I'm very excited about. My thing is nothing with a face. And I don't know if that – I mean, why does that matter? I don't know. In my mind, I feel like an oyster is not as aware of the world around it. And so if an oyster's time on this planet comes to an end in my mouth, I don't feel as bad about it then. The top of the list would be like a cow or something or a pig, and then you work all the way down even to a dumb fish, which I don't know. Fishing as a thing is like – I used to love fishing when I was a kid, and we used to go to this place called the Lazy F Ranch in Ellensburg, Washington. They had a stocked pond.
Yeah, I think they chose F. I have heard of lazy.
But like the –
you lazy F.
The first name was the Lazy POS, and then they changed it to the Lazy F. We used to go – we'd have a church camp out there every summer, and so much happened to me at that old Lazy F camp in Ellensburg. One, there was this old salty guy who ran the place. He was like right out of Central Casting of Cowboys. Like he had bow legs, gray hair, wore a cowboy hat, and one time somebody saw a rattlesnake under something, and they were like, go get Jerry. I'm going to call him Jerry because that was probably his name. And they said, I remember being a really little kid and somebody going, he went and looked at it, and then it was under a thing, and they were like, are you going to drag it out? And he goes, Mama didn't raise no fool.
That, like, he's not putting any octopodes on his face.
Yeah, he ain't going to climb under there. Mama didn't raise no fool. I was like, I was probably like 7 years old and being like, oh, that's hilarious.
The first
Mama
time you hear that.
No fool. One time I was hiding underneath like a kind of a flatbed trailer / stage. You know what I'm talking about? One of those like you can hook it up to a truck and pull it around, but then you park it in a field and you can stand up there and have like church services. And we were playing hide and go seek, and I was hiding under this stage / trailer. And my plan was to wait until the kid that was looking for me started to get underneath the trailer. And then I would spring out from under the trailer so fast. And then they would be like trapped under there. And then I would be running free back to home base.
Mm-hmm.
Have I told you this story?
No.
And I'm so excited. I'm coiled like a spring. And I'm just like ready to all of my little, again, I'm probably at this point 10 or something. All of my 10-year-old strength is ready to go. The kid starts to climb underneath the thing. And I full force spring out. I look forward. And what I don't realize is that there's like this weird piece of jagged metal that's been like right in front of my face
because
weird. And I just lacerate. I mean, I basically surgically remove my entire eyebrow, like the middle of it. Like my whole eye, this is a little gross for people. Basically, my whole eyebrow, lower eyebrow and lid are hanging down over my eye. And I'm bleeding profusely. And I go find my parents and they're at some like, it's nighttime and they're at some kind of campfire churchy thing. And this is – I don't bring this up to, you know, whatever. Shit talk my parents. But you'd think maybe you take your kid to the doctor on that one. You know, eyebrow hanging off, visible bone. I know. We'll get a couple butterfly bandages. We'll butterfly that bad boy up.
Just
we'll call
flayed.
That good.
The flayed man just, guy. Yeah.
I mean, luckily it was such a clean – like it was so – it was really just like basically surgical that it just – it did actually mend okay. But I still have a big scar in my eyebrow. But it was like – I was like, I remember just walking up to them and like holding my eyelid slash eyebrow to my head and just covered in now dried blood. And I'd never been to the hospital that I could remember at that point. I don't think I'd broken my arm yet in football. So I don't think I'd ever been to the ER. And I was actually like, oh, this is going to suck. I'm going to get stitches. In a weird way, I was sort of like dreading the what I thought was inevitable hospital ride. Mm-hmm. But my mom being my mom, this seemed like something that could be addressed with the whatever first aid kit was around.
Put a frozen jug of milk on that. In a Band-Aid,
you're
fine.
I guess she wasn't. Look, in her defense, I guess she wasn't wrong. I'm fine. Yeah. I was okay.
Do you have a scar? Because I have a scar in my eyebrow. Yeah. I didn't know that you had a scar. We're eyebrow scar
I have
brothers.
A big. Yeah. That's Scarborough Country. That's the podcast we should start. Can we call this episode Scarborough Country?
It is amazing how those guys just pop up in life everywhere.
Don't they?
I mean, and I'm a fan.
Did you hear them on This American Life?
Yes, I heard them on This American Life then, and that was like
two jokes to Julian Castro.
Yes, and then that was just like their new This American Life like 2 weeks ago, and then I'm still like going back and listening to archive episodes of Comedy Death Ray from literally 10 years ago. So like I get done listening to This American Life, and then I go back to an archive, and there they are on that. They used to be on the show I worked on in L.A. I know that you know those guys. We've had them on various shows and stuff in Cairo, and used to be on. You've been on. Were you on with them on Madeline Brand's old show? At KPCC?
Maybe. It's possible. I mean, we've had them on various things that I've worked on. I don't think I've ever done a live thing with them. I love them. They're very funny.
Yeah, I like them too, but it's just really funny how
We used to have them on Day to Day, the show that I worked on in L.A.
Yeah, yep.
A lot too. And that like was when I first sort of found out about them.
Tons of TV stuff. You know, that one thing that we play on the show a lot is David Cross saying, I lost hundreds of pounds and gained hundreds of confidence. That clip is from some short-lived show that they did on, I want to say,
Seats.
Is that what it was called? Was that on the sport? Was that a funny show on a sports network or a sports show on a funny network? I can't remember.
It was a funny show on a sports network.
I've lost hundreds of pounds and gained hundreds of confidence.
Yeah, they're great. Anyway, the thing I used to look forward to in the world the most, practically, other than competent medical care applied when I had shattered the skin and bone on my face. No, the thing I looked forward to was going to the Lazy F Ranch and fishing in this stocked pond because, you know, it was easy to catch fish because it had a bunch of fish in it. And I loved it. And and I'm not down on anybody who likes fishing, but I'm just saying for me personally, like I always really like enjoyed fishing as a kid. And my dad's a fly fisherman and, I went halibut fishing in Alaska a couple of years ago, which was kind of BS because basically the crazy guide just like parked the boat over the halibut and then sunk the line and then caught the fish and then I reeled it up. Mm-hmm. So it was the lowest level of fishing. But all of this is to say at some point I was like – I started to really empathize with the fish. I was like, yeah. How's the fish feel about being pulled out by a hook through its face? Like – the fish is not loving that. Now, I know they're not exactly charismatic characters, but at some point I was just like, because I feel like even people that consider them, and now I'm so sorry. I apologize to people that are so tired of me just doing this. But again, I'm just talking about my personal journey. I'm not telling anybody else how to live their life. But for me, I was just like, it amazed me that at no time previous to 2 years ago did I think about the fact that the fish is probably not stoked about the hook.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I kind of knew that. I used to fish a lot in our backyard. Growing up in the country, we had a pond, and the pond had a lot of bluegill and bass in it. I never caught bass, but I would catch tons of bluegill.
Pond.
Yeah, it was a pretty big pond. It wasn't a lake. It was a pond, but it was a
pool or a pond, either. Do you know that one?
Is that Bill Murray?
Yeah, that's Caddyshack.
Yeah, yeah.
When he comes to Chevy Chase's house, and he's like, oh, you got a pool out back? Oh, we got a pond. Pool or a pond?
I didn't know that exact line, but I knew your imitation was good because I knew it was knew it was him from Caddyshack, so good job.
Anyway, so
but I used to
bluegill.
Catch bluegill like crazy, and like I didn't know better on a lot of these things, and I would like put them in a bucket. Like I would see my older cousins would come visit, and they would catch these things and put them in a bucket. And so, you know, I had a little kid's fishing rod. I would go out there, I would fish, and I would put them in a bucket. And I remember my parents coming out one time and being like, dude, you have all these living fish in this bucket of water, but I just kept, I mean, there were tons of them, and I would just keep putting them in the bucket, putting them in the bucket until there was more fish than water in there. I really have a horrible memory of this. And then a parent, because I was old enough to be fishing, but young enough not to really know
better.
You know, I wasn't trying to be cruel. And they're like, oh no, I mean, you're kind of, you know, they didn't say it, but I was kind of torturing these fish. I feel terrible about that. I remember, I mean, this is really graphic, but you know, like I would catch fish and sometimes that hook would come in, not just through their cheek, but it would come in
eyeball.
Yeah. Yep. And it just like, it was so grotesque. And then I felt bad, you know, and at the time I think it was just like, I don't know, it's a kid growing up in the country. This is what you did. But looking back on that.
Well, you're told they don't
have
very many nerve endings.
Yeah.
That's what I was always hearing as a kid. They can't feel it.
But you know that there's something going on in my brain at the time that seeing that I've, you know, again, I'm sorry about this, but like seeing that I've poked another animal's eyeball out, even if you're told that this is just how it works, you know in your brain, or at least I know in my brain, there's part of my brain that is not cool with that. You know, I don't think I like stayed up late at night worrying about it at the time. It probably seemed fine, but looking back on it now, like obviously that's a very gruesome thing.
Yeah, well, that's what's weird to me is that my brain did not realize that it was, again, everybody live your life and enjoy. Someone's probably on a fishing, like right now sitting in a lake listening to this on their iPhone while they're fishing, and I don't want to take anyone's joy away from that. But what's weird to me is that it literally didn't occur to me until a couple of years ago that that's kind of a bum deal for the fish. Like, because I grew up with it. My dad, like I said, used to love to fish. And it was some really great memories. I remember going like backpacking with my dad and catching rainbow trout in a stream and cooking them for breakfast and thinking, this is so weird. We're eating fish for breakfast. But it was like so good cooking them in a, you know, like a, over like a campfire and stuff. So like some of my, I have really good memories around fishing and that whole thing. But it and I'm not, again, I keep stressing this, but it's like I'm not telling people that they shouldn't do it. I just, for me, I'm not really into it anymore, I guess.
Yeah, and for me, my story about just feeling like it was wrong or part of me knew it was wrong or feeling like it was gruesome, to the person sitting on their boat right now fishing, like I was doing it wrong. I'm not making like some judgment about whether or not people should stop fishing, but I know that anybody who's listening to this fishing right now, which by the way, that just sounds so like, that sounds so romantic. If you're just like on a boat in the middle of a lake somewhere fishing, like
bobber.
Yeah.
Just a bobber sitting on the surface of the water.
That person is either catching those fish and taking them home and cleaning them and eating them, or that person is doing it in a responsible way and catching and releasing them. Like, I'm not here saying anybody needs to stop fishing. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying I feel bad about what I was doing because I didn't really know. I knew enough to catch the fish. I didn't know enough to treat them right. And that's just what I think of when I think of myself back in those days.
Well, that's a thing too. That's a regret, I think, for people no matter where they are on the sort of spectrum of what their relationship with like animals and animal products are now. I think we can all think of times when we were kids where we were more cruel to an animal than we really realized we were being, and that's a bummer to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say that judgingly, because I, you know, I can think of examples too. It's like you're a kid, you just don't really understand the world, and you're out in the world interacting with whether it's bugs or snakes or pets or whatever, and there's a lot of that stuff that you look back on and you think, I would never do that as an adult. But you just don't get it when you're a kid. So speaking of animals, can I tell you about Squawkzilla really quick?
Oh yeah.
Scientists in New Zealand had these bones that they had found, and they thought that they were dug up in 2008 in St. Bathins, New Zealand. It was part of a big fossil deposit that had been a prehistoric lake, and they thought that the bones were from an ancient eagle. And so for like 10 years, these bones were just like hanging around in some research facility. They're like, yeah, ancient eagle. Cool. Which, by the way, would be my wrestling name if I ever get back into
the
game.
Oh, the Ancient Eagle.
Ancient Eagle.
I see you, like, jumping off the – you said wrestling, yeah. Right, not boxing?
Yeah, jumping off the top rope, but then
okay, cool.
Crashing and hurting myself real bad because I'm an Ancient Eagle.
Yeah, because
I can't really fly anymore.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't
not good. Hey, get down. You're going to hurt yourself. I'm Ancient Eagle. No, I know. You can't. Please, get down. If you were a British bulldog, maybe, but not an Ancient Eagle. So the scientists finally decided to take another look at this, and they compared these bones to all of the other known like bird bones from that era, and by elimination, they concluded that there were no other birds it could be other than a giant parrot, probably the largest parrot that has ever been found. The bird lived in the early Miocene period, which was about from 23 to 16 million years ago. They think the bird couldn't fly and probably consumed what was easily gotten on the ground, berries, nuts, seeds, and also possibly living animals, if living animals were to come by. They think it's similar to a – I've been texting with your girlfriend, and I hope that, you know
– during the show?
Cool with this. It's a weird way for you to find this out. Yeah, because I texted to Genevieve this morning. I was like, bird-related content for you. And she responded with the exact right response. She goes, this is amazing, but I'm more interested in the present-day New Zealand parrot that tries to eat stranded sheep. Because, yes, Andrew, there is something called the Kia, not spelled K-I-A, but spelled K-E-A, that is a large, not as large as this prehistoric parrot, but a really large parrot called the Kia that – or Kea that will sometimes attack sheep. That still lives. And they have a picture of it, Andrew, and I am going to send you this picture. Or do you have the article open?
No, I don't. Is it in the – no, I don't think I have any of these
materials.
Please
scroll down to midway through the article and observe a picture of a Kea parrot.
I'm watching – okay, I don't have an article, so if you want to send me one. But I'm watching videos of them trying to eat someone's shoes while they're wearing them. This is not a bird you want to mess with, people. Why do people let – birds eat their shoes.
This parrot has been nicknamed the prehistoric one. The crazy huge one has been nicknamed Squawkzilla.
I like that name. I thought when you promoted this, I mean, not to, I mean, good on you for selling the sizzle, but like I thought this. What you told me, you have a story about a parrot the size of a kindergartner. I thought this thing was
That's
walking around right now. Yeah,
squawking and walking.
Yeah, I thought it was squawking and walking. Let's give him something to squawking and walking about. Christopher Squawking? No.
Yeah,
no.
Okay.
No,
wait, did you write down the other thing, though? What was the other possible show title? Please tell me you wrote it down.
The only thing I wrote down was let's give him something to squawk about, which you said before I opened my mic.
Oh, there was a thing I said like 10 minutes. It was my fault. If I wanted it to be in the show, I should have written it down. Dang it.
Did you ring a bell? I only respond with
a
bell.
I did ring
a bell. You did? Oh, I didn't.
You did?
No, I didn't. No.
But you keep track of every time I ring this bell?
Oh, yes. Now I'm hungry. Wait, what are we doing?
you're right. The Squawkzilla does not exist anymore, but Squawkzilla, they estimate based on its bone, you know, the size of the bones they found, Squawkzilla was 4 feet tall. It was the size of a kindergartner.
Wow.
And it is, but it is no longer, can you imagine if your mom would have had a, instead of oops, if oops would have been a Squawkzilla?
Oh my God. Or one of these Kias.
Oops, dirty monster.
I'm watching a video now you can find on YouTube, Kia destroying a police car. There's just these two big birds. They're about the size of, I don't know, they're like the shape of a football, but maybe it's twice the size of a football. And they're just going to town, like trying to rip apart this, rip apart the windshield wipers and everything on this police car.
Now, will you please check your email and look at this Kia that I just sent you, this picture of this bird?
Yes. I don't have anything in my email yet, so I'm still waiting for that to come through.
I think your email's broken, bro.
Okay,
no.
I don't know.
Anyway, there's the picture they use in the Washington Post. I would like it to be the show pick today because it is the greatest photo of a bird I've ever seen. It's just – I can't quite describe it. That's why I keep – I want to hear your reaction when you see it, but I guess we're not going to
eventually it should come through. I don't know what's going on here. I've refreshed.
Anyway.
I've checked my spam folder. I don't know.
You're doing the work.
I'm doing
the
work.
You're baby stepping.
I'm spam stepping.
So Squawkzilla was a real thing, and they don't exist anymore. And I, for one, am I'm fine with that because I find parrots kind of upsetting. In fact, when I was playing angry parrot sounds before the show, I could tell that it was like bringing back some real. So I was looking for some audio tape to play in the promotion, and I have something in. I just was looking for the word parrot, and I have something in my iTunes called Angry Parrot. This must have been from a story we did years ago where there was a parrot that had lived in a very dysfunctional home and had just started to mimic the mean way that people talk to each other in the home. And I started playing it, trying to find some audio tape, and you were like, that is a really unpleasant sound.
You want to play some of it? Let the listeners hear it. Because you were just like trying to cue it up, and I was doing some work. Yeah. So it wasn't like I was paying tons of attention to it. I was just like finishing an email or something. And it's one of those things where it's going on in the background, and then suddenly you're just like, stop. Like, that is a terrible sound.
Yes. And you never get annoyed with me like that, or at least you usually keep it under wraps. But you couldn't keep it under wraps.
I usually just scream it into
not making your morning.
I got work to do. Oh, okay, stop it.
This should be, listen, this should be part of any couple's counseling.
Yeah. This is what it sounds like when you argue. Stop doing it.
This is what it sounds like when parrots cry.
Yeah.
No, this is exactly because what you're hearing is nothing specific. This bird isn't angry. This bird doesn't understand that kind of stuff. But you hear how idiotic and futile. What you do, it's almost like when you take the actual specific words out of the argument, you just hear the emotion and aggression, and you almost can kind of see a person is wanting something, but they're not able to express it properly, and so you're just getting this wall of anger. I swear, if you played this for like an arguing couple, it would really illustrate how pointless it is to talk to each other that way.
Yeah. You know, when you were queuing it up, I don't think I knew that was the backstory. Now that you say that, I vaguely remember that story. But I didn't even kind of – I wasn't listening close enough to pick up on the aggression, and it just sounded like a bird making racket, and I didn't like the sound of it. But yeah, that is a combination of two things. Like, I hate confrontation. I told you I couldn't even watch the you know, the debates because they get – because I feel like they get too tetchy with each other. So, yeah, the sound of, like, a confrontation coming through those vocal cords, not good. Also not good, one of our internet connections, because I still haven't gotten that picture that you sent me.
That picture? Let me see what my – oh, man. My internet says it was sent, so – but
no, it's stuck. It's literally – I enjoy these moments, though, when you sent something out. It's definitely cleared your deck. It's definitely not in mine.
Yeah,
like
5 minutes ago.
Where is it? I mean, it's kind of fascinating to think about, right? Like, this thing is just Stanwood? Out there somewhere. It's just in Stanwood. It's in Northwest City.
Now it's in Everett.
Yeah.
Now it's moving to Northwest City. Now it stopped off at the McDonald's right off of I-5 at the Northgate exit. Now it's at that Starbucks in Roosevelt that I always go to, and I always text you, do you need a coffee? And you always say, no, I'm fine.
Oh, now they sous-vide it there.
Yep.
Now it's
now it went to buy some high-end stereo equipment at the place that's now closed down.
Stopped at
Great. I just explained exactly how to get to your
it
house.
It stopped at Hawthorne Audio. All right. what was I going to say? Oh, you know, somebody sent us a story. I didn't like the way the story was written. It was written like clickbait. It didn't – the headline was totally clickbait, and then it – took you like five graphs to then for them to explain what the hell they were talking about. Is like Burger King has a secret about its new meatless burgers, and it wouldn't say what the secret was. It just kept I hate those kinds of stories. But when it finally got to the nut of the story, turns out it says somewhere in the small print that as Burger King is serving these meatless burgers, that they're still going to be cooked in the same grease and oil as the meat burgers. That's going to piss some people off.
It is going to piss some people off. I'm not one of those people, but it is going to piss people off because – and by the way, thanks to Michael for sending it in. Michael is becoming a junior producer of the program, is sending in lots of good little articles.
Watch out, Hayes.
Boy, if Michael starts moving into the bidet space, it's all over. It doesn't bother me because I'm not like it's to me. It's like the burgers are getting cooked, you know, like on that grill, the real burgers, and then my fake burger's getting cooked on that grill, and I'm not eating a real burger, and that means something to me. But for people that, for religious reasons and others, that they just do not want it touching, that is a big. That's a huge thing, and it's interesting because part of what we've talked about this so much about the fake meat burger industry and how it relates to restaurants, and I was always like, why don't they just have one on the menu? And what people were saying was, well, because you got to set aside grill space for it. I guess Burger King has decided they're not going to do that. I guess they decided there are more people like me who are sort of casual vegetarians who are not super duper, you know, legalistic about it. And they figure probably they'll keep us happy. And, you know, the people that are more careful about it will just have to, you know, just be bummed out, I guess. But, yeah, that's going to probably upset some people.
There's a right way to rock and a wrong way to roll. You can't just listen to your soul. Just remember that life is number one. You can be having so much fun. Just
did you get the picture of the bird yet?
No, I haven't. Do you know this song was written by Dave Berman? It's not him performing on it, but it's one of his...
Just remember that life is number one.
I mean, you can hear it now that I say it, right? You can,
yes, now, yeah, exactly.
I love,
exactly.
Yeah, I love things
how did
like
I
that.
Not pick that up?
Yeah, I love it. It all fits together. Let's do some Blurs Days. How about this? Mike from Livermore, a.k.a. I'm a large man. A very large man.
Oh, that guy.
I'm not scared to use my dad
voice. And my words will have meaning.
That's right. I want to send a belated shout-out to myself. Last year, my daughter Rosie hacked my computer and sent you a message.
I am a large man. I'm a very large man, is. And I use my dad voice a lot.
Well, last year, Mike says his daughter hacked his computer and sent us a message for him, calling him or calling TBTL a cult. And then Mike says, I asked her why she didn't do it this year, and she said, you aren't still listening to them, are you? Sadly, the answer was not no.
Solid. That's weird to have a daughter who loves you so much that she'll hack into the mainframe and toast the quarterback to get you a message, but then also assumes that you'll stop listening immediately after.
Right. It's just a phase. Dad'll grow out of it. Karen says, I'm hoping you can help me out with a special belated Blurs Day shout out to my favorite nephew five.
Okay.
Ezra, who just turned 7. I was the worst aunt ever. Luke, you and I can do a real service here. Karen says, I was the worst aunt ever, and I forgot to call him on his birthday, and my fives, his cousins, were away at camp, and they couldn't call him either. Hopefully a message from you two will help make up for my bad. Thanks for helping make an auntie's heart feel less sad. So, Ezra, from Luke and I, and your Aunt Karen, happy Blurs Day, boy.
Yeah. Wish I had a podcast I could call to make up for all the... Hey, actually, can I do this real quick? She'll not hear it because she's in Scotland. But happy Blurs Day to my niece, Maddie.
Oh, Maddie. We know Maddie.
13 today. Yes, one of our unpaid Stranger Things correspondents. Mm-hmm. By the way, she wants to come back on the show and talk about Stranger Things Season 3.
Oh, I'd like that, yeah.
I'm just going to see if I can find this on the fly. I was going to say, I wish I had a podcast I could call to help cover for the fact that I'm a sort of lousy uncle most of the time. But I got this text from, I can't find him on the fly, but my little niece. It was so cute because I had mentioned to her in passing. I was like, hey, we should have you on to talk about Stranger Things. So then she, because she's very like organized, she then texted me her entire schedule for like 2 weeks of when she could come on and talk about Stranger Things.
Here are my avails. Put it on my calendar.
She literally did. She was like, here are my avails. And then I was like, oh, you know what? I was like, let me talk to Andrew about it and we'll try to figure out, you know, when would work. And she goes, well, I'm going to Scotland in a week. So maybe it should be before that or it could be after that. Oh, here we go. Okay. Will you humor me?
Yeah.
I get this text out of the blue a couple weeks ago. I mean, it wasn't because I guess I had talked to her about it when she was over, but I didn't remember the conversation. I am free on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday if you want to do the Stranger Things talk. We could try tomorrow night, but it would be easiest during Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. FYI, this is Maddie. The new message. And I'm excited to talk Stranger Things.
Well, let's get around when she's back from the I got to watch some of those. Okay. We talked about it a little bit when you were out. Hannah had watched all of them, and I was going to kind of bow out this time. I wasn't a huge fan of season 2. But have you watched any of them?
No, I liked season 1 a lot. I didn't really get with season 2, but I would be willing to put some time in just for the segment. By the way, I texted the response after I texted her and I said, I'll talk to Andrew about it. She says, yeah, I'm in Scotland in a couple weeks, but this week you can contact me in the evenings because I have theater camp this week.
Hmm.
But I'll be home each night by 5:30, except for Friday during our evening dress rehearsal.
She needs an assistant. Cute. Can we just contact – like, doesn't she have a person we can just contact to take
care of
this?
Yeah, it's her sister Marion, but Marion's the worst assistant ever because all she wants to do is sing karaoke, Don't You Forget About Dying.
Don't You Forget About Dying?
You know that whole?
No.
That whole deal?
Uh-uh.
She loves this band called Ghost that does this kind of – I don't even know if it's quite death metal. It's more like – I think it's – I don't know what genre it falls into, but I'm going to just call it – I'm going to call it death metal, even though that's – I know that's not the correct genre. But it's a very downbeat song about death, and it goes, don't you forget about dying. Don't you forget about your friend death. Don't you forget that you will die. And one time I was at my sister Hannah's house, and we were doing a karaoke night, me and my nieces and my sister, and – Marion decided to close out the night with Don't You Forget About Dying.
Wow.
And I videotaped it. I put it on the internet and I said, this is karaoke night has really taken a turn.
Wow. Well, she, I mean, it's cool that a young person like that has such a comfortable relation. You know, I know that some parents have trouble talking to their kids about, you know, what happens when we're done living. But it sounds like she has, she's kind of, you know, she's got that part taken care of. She understands death now. Now this song is not. This song is
completely waylaid us.
No, it's fine
with this whole discussion.
How does she know this? I mean, this song is not like a song for kids that is like supposed to be teaching them about death, right? Like this is like just a real heavy metal song.
No, it's not like Peppa Pig that sings about death.
Right.
No, she knows about it because my brother-in-law is a quirky dude who likes things like the band Ghost.
Okay.
And plays them a lot, and and it really seems to have resonated with my niece. I was trying to find, I don't know how to find a tweet from like a million years ago. Search Twitter. Oh man, no. All I have is hashtag feral hogs. Keep going.
Let's
keep going with the Blur's Days, and if I happen across this video, I'll play it for you at the end, but if not, no biggie. Ooh, brought that up in a great time.
Ira says, can I give a Blur's Day shout out to my wife, Natalie? I'm incredibly lucky that she's chosen to share her life with me and grateful that she has grown to tolerate my view that all toothbrushes are communal property. Do you have an Do you have an sound
that
effect
is a
there?
Scorch take.
P.S. Here's a picture of Natalie sharing TBTL with a statue of Columbo in the middle of Budapest. Do you know that? I know I'm not pronouncing Budapest perfectly correctly there, but that's how I say it. Do you know that Budapest has a Columbo statue?
No.
Yeah, other people have sent in photos of it, and I like it. Natalie's standing there. She's holding her phone so we can see that she's listening to TBTL, and she's doing an imitation of Columbo next to the statue of Columbo. It's very cool.
I've been to Budapest. That's on. That one is on the Danube, right? Is it on? It's on the big river there?
I'm just going to pretend that that's a rhetorical question. I'm not getting into... I'm not here to answer any questions about Budapest. I know nothing about it.
I went to Hungary, and I went out to a place called Komárom, and I did these this video for Microsoft when they were merging with Nokia. I went out to this factory and met these lovely people, spent a long day shooting all of this stuff and being funny and wacky in this Nokia factory. Or it's really a place where they box up Nokia phones, but it was all about the peaceful merging of these two companies. Got back to the U.S. and then found out that they were actually closing that factory. We couldn't use the video.
Anyway, thanks for sending the photo. Hope you enjoyed Budapest, and happy Blur's Day to Natalie. Give you a little teaser for this one earlier. Rachel wants to shout out to her husband, Ivan. Rachel and Ivan, by the way, great friends of the show. Rachel also, I worked with her at KUOW.
Oh, really?
These are some real IRL friends here.
That.
Yeah. This year marks 10 years. This is Rachel talking. This marks 10 years that we've been together, and this is the first birthday either of us has spent away from the other. Ivan is on a business trip, but it felt serendipitous that his birthday is on Thursday. since both of us are both a little obsessed with the Blursday song, both the original and the deeply moving Josh Groban cover. Happy birthday to my best friend and favorite person. I'll see you soon.
Oh, that is very sweet.
Those people
it.
Right there, good people. Very good people.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the most loving... The most loving sound effect I have on this thing.
It's going to be a fart. No, I know you're going to play the fart. Okay, good.
No, it's not. I have clapping. I have the smiley face. That's just laughing. What about
the wolf whistle? What about the wolf whistle? That's kind of...
Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, I don't want to know about their personal life. How about this one?
Yeah,
oh,
no.
I forgot there was a burp. I'm not trolling them. There's the drawings on this sound machine are like... Some of them are very helpful. The spring sound looks like a spring, but the burp one looks like a person yelling. So
wait, who's the listener who fixed the power switch on your... Michael, can you please send Luke one where you correct the drawings? Come on. What does Luke got to do?
Love a gosh, Michael.
Jeez,
come
Louise.
On. Help out. Get that child of yours helping out, too, who's in the photo, who's adorable, by the way. Picture that Michael emailed me.
Listener Hess, also longtime friend of the show.
Yeah, Hess in South Korea, right?
That's right. She says she has two shout-outs. One to her bestie, Megan. I met her through TBTL about a year-ish ago. Nice. She's been one of my support beams in my life since we met during a Korean TBTL meetup. And again, during my hospitalization in Korea about a month ago.
Oh, no.
Thank you for being an awesome person and for being a true 10. So happy Blursday to Megan, but also Hess. I hope you're feeling okay. I don't know what's going on there, but hopefully everything's good with you.
Also, we apparently, I mean, between the meetup at the Japanese baseball game and a Korean meetup, we need to, at some point, Andrew, go to the Far East. We need to do some, I'm not proposing it as our next TBTL-thon. Although maybe.
Get Resler on the phone.
Can we get Nippon Air to sponsor it? But we do, We have, part of the mythology of this show or the lore around this show is that, you know, we for a while we're trying to position ourselves as Japan's number one morning show.
That's
hence
true.
Sean being Japan's number one mixer, hence Sugoi being a word that we used a lot on the show. We were big over there.
Oh no, I've run out of music. Does that mean we just start it from the very beginning? No, it doesn't.
Yes, we do.
I'll just bring it up here. Hess also wants to wish a happy Blursday to her 11, Chris, who is slowly turning into a 10. Although, do you notice I almost didn't say last name? By the way, I don't do last names on Blursdays. I don't know if you guys noticed that. I always get rid of the last names. I don't know why. It seemed like it was a car talk rule, and I'm sticking with it. But anyway, happy Blursday to Hess's 11, Chris, who's slowly turning into a 10. Although I don't think he gets the show quite yet. He doesn't complain when I make him listen to it during long drives. He's my foundation.
Which stage of grief is that?
Yeah.
What
stage of captivity is that, I think, is the word you're looking for. She says, he's my foundation. I'm so happy that he helped me become the person I am right now. But if he ever makes me stop listening and donating to the show, well, she just ... on that one. She can't even say the word. So watch
you
it,
you know
Chris.
What side your bread is buttered
That's
on.
That's right.
Don't mess with us.
Don't mess with Hess.
Why am I... Am I threatening Hess's boyfriend?
All right, one more here. Amber in Baltimore. This came in just under the wire, by the way. This just came in. This one. Okay. Can you feel touch that? Still hot, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
look at
is.
That. Amber in Baltimore. I'd like to wish a happy Blursday to Aaron from Indianapolis. From his TBTL daddy or mommy. Ooh. No, that's definitely worse. I hope he has a great day with perfect weather to lounge at the I-70 beach and watch the traffic go by.
Wait, what?
I guess there's something called the I-70.
That's the thing I was talking about before the show.
Oh, really? That's what you're doing your story on?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, where'd you say? Are they in Indianapolis?
Indianapolis, the I-70 beach.
I think that must be, is that a nickname for this thing, the Indy Idol? The Idol?
I don't know. I'm looking it up as we speak.
Because right before the show, I was talking to you about this TV story that I have literally been, I mean, I've been working on it continuously for 2 years, but like I think probably 2 years ago or something, I went and got the initial footage, and it's finally going to go on TV in the fall about this kind of crazy park that this guy got built in the middle of like three freeways in Indianapolis. This guy, Tom Batista, and I mean, I-70 Beach and watch the cars go by. That sounds like that's got to be the same place. I think must be sarcastic.
Well, I'll tell you this. A couple of things here. Amber has one more thing to say, but before I get to that, I want to say something. I'm gonna blame you for something. I still have not gotten your email. I did just get an email from Genevieve, and I've been hearing some clicks and pops on the line. My friend, you might have an internet issue on your side. Have you considered that instead of pillaring me?
No, I've never considered it.
It might be your fault. Hey, back to Amber for a second. On an unrelated note, I have garbage anxiety. My neighbors grabbed my trash can on Monday, and even though I've left theirs at the edge of the alley, it has not been switched back yet. That is relatable. So she could probably just take their garbage can, but she doesn't want their garbage can. She wants her garbage can. But right. They're just like one of the – they're that type of person that just goes through life not really thinking about garbage every second of their waking life. And that's not the type of people we need in this world.
Exactly. Is that the end?
That's it.
Can we go out with this?
Don't forget about Diane. Don't forget about your friend. Don't forget that you will die.
Wow. You're not kidding.
Yeah, good stuff.
You're not kidding. Wow, very clear. When you told me you were just taping it on your phone at a karaoke in your house, I thought, or somebody's house, I thought, well, it's probably not going to be able, I won't be able to hear the words anyway. But no, that's very clear. It's very clear. Good recording on your part.
Thank you. I worked hard on it. All right. I guess that's going to be it. Sorry that you never got the photo. Sorry my internet sucks. That's just classic Northwest City, Washington.
It is, yeah.
So deal with it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We are going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio, edition of the show.
Can we go out with a song that I love off of the first Silver Jews record? This is called New Orleans, and it has one of my favorite funny little lines. About a minute in, you'll hear him say, "There is a house in New Orleans." It's not the one heard about. I'm talking about another house, which is...
You played this for me
in
Australia.
Yes, it's a great song. And it's a little joke about the House of the Rising Sun, of course.
I love it. And I one of the things that I think is... I mean, maybe it's not that surprising, but it's that I feel like you and I, when we listen to a song... I mean, most of the time, if we listen to a song or a piece of tape or whatever, or an episode of Patriot, we'll zero in on the same things. And I seem to remember that like we were driving... listening to this song, and I cracked up at that line.
It's
you were
so
like,
good. It's so funny.
You were like waiting to see, to see if I was gonna have the same reaction. And that is a great line.
It
so,
really is.
Well, how about this? I'll just say goodbye. We'll say goodbye, and then start the song in the clear. If old Dave Berman deserves that much. So thanks for listening, everybody. We're gonna be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall,
and good luck to all.
Smoke. Well, you can't say, that my soul has died away. No, you can't say, that my soul has died away. Oh, well, there's trouble in the heart.
There is a house in New Orleans, not the one you heard about. I'm talking about another house. They spoke of gold in the cellar that a Spanish gentleman had left. I broke in 100 years ago with a dagger tucked in my vest. Legends of gold I've tried to hold, the gray half-light of the hallway at night. One, two, three, four, five. We're trapped inside the song. Well, we're trapped inside the song. Trapped inside the song. Trapped inside the song. Where the nights are so long. Trapped inside the song. Trapped inside the song. Trapped inside the song. Where the nights are so long. Trapped inside us all.
Power out.